Now, it's time for the Cybersecurity News Bite with Jim Guckin.
Cybersecurity News Bite, episode number 46 for February 20th, 2023. Fortinet patches 40 flaws, Twitter MMS MFA disaster, Coinbase cyber attack target employees with fake SMS alerts, and Spain orders extradition of alleged British hacker to the U.S. Welcome to another Cybersecurity News Bite. I am Jim Guckin. And the first story we're going to talk about this week in our cybersecurity things you need to be on the lookout for, obviously, is Fortinet put out patches recently for about 40 different flaws. So in kind of something you need to pay attention to. Some more critical than others, obviously. So these 40 flaws include two criticals, 15 highs, 22 mediums, and one low. And the good thing about this was, compared to most things, this was internally discovered by the Fortinet team themselves. No security researcher found it, no hacker found it, at least that they are aware of. So they found it, and they started the fixes pretty quick. So let's talk about some of the ones and the versions that are impacted and what you need to be on the lookout for. So the first one is CVE-2022-39952. It has a CVSS score of 9.8 out of 10. And this one's in the 40 NAC, Network Access Control solution. It allows a potential attacker to run arbitrary code, and the attacker does not need to be authenticated to the system to be able to write to it. So the impacted versions are Fortinet version 9.4, version 9.2.0 through 9.2.5, version 9.1.0, through version 9.1.7, version 8.8 all versions, 8.7 all versions, 8.6 all versions, 8.5 all versions, and 8.3. Now I should say Horizon 2 AI group plans to release a proof of concept code soon. They are just giving everyone enough time to start patching that system before they start doing it for this one. So it's very important to kind of pay attention. And make sure your systems are patched as soon as possible. The other big one from this is CVE-2021-42756. It has a CVSS score of 9.3 out of 10. It allows an unauthenticated attacker to run whatever code they want via HTTP requests. So this is impacted Fortinet 40 web version 6.4, all versions 6.3.16, 6.2.6, 6.1.2, 6.07 and below, version 5x all versions. But the good thing about this one is the fixes are available in Fortinet versions 6.0.8, 6.1.3, 6.2.7, 6.3.17, and version 7. Now, obviously, I don't expect you to have written them all down or memorized them or even possibly knew off the top of your head what version you have. You can find all this information in the show notes available at cybersecuritynewsbite.com. But just like always, like I'm always trying to warn people, this is a perfect chance to patch your systems. Make sure you're out ahead of this. As I said, these were discovered internally by the team. There's been no reports that it's been outside. As you can tell by the CVE, some of these were known for quite some time, and I guess it took a while to build the code properly to fix them. For those of you who don't know, where CVEs are vulnerabilities, common vulnerability list, and the first four numbers, the 2022 and 2021 in these examples, are the year in which they are reported. So the fact that, you know, it's 2021 and 2022 shows they've been around for a while, but luckily they haven't been exploited up to this point, and all it takes is someone to be able to get the code up and running for, you know, real problems to start existing. So if you have these, please make sure you're checking your vendor website or Fortinet's website very frequently. Make sure they're updated. And don't forget any systems you may have that, you know, are not your main data center, your backup centers or anything along those lines. Make sure that you have them. They are updated. And you continue to watch the website to make sure you cover these. You know, at least we cover the two criticals here, but the 15 highs and the 22 mediums are generally ones you should be tackling. The low one, you know, that's up to an individual choice. I mean, I always loved it if we could get down to zero, but at least medium and above, you should be able to do it, especially these two critical ones. Because, as I said, Horizon 2 AI has a proof of concept code, which means if they figure it out and once it's announced, it's not going to take long for hackers to figure it out. You need to start patching immediately. Now, this next story is something that you've probably seen a lot of technologists or cybersecurity people speak about, but I want to take a different approach on this. So, March 20th, Twitter has made an announcement that the text feature for when you want to do multi-factor authentication, you have more than one way of getting in. You know your password, and then it texts you a code, and then you put that code on the website, and then it lets you in. That used to be free. They are making it Twitter Blue only, meaning you have to pay for that. And if you're currently using it, once March 20th rolls around, it'll be automatically disabled. Now, that's not saying that Twitter is taking away all of the MFA options you may have out there. You can still use an authentication app like Google or any of those ones that keep the key that kind of rotates through every 30 seconds or so. Those will still work. You can also have a security key like a YubiKey that use it. But there's been a lot of like, well, you know, you probably should have moved over to the new versions anyway. And honestly, every security person will tell you, and I'll tell you the same, SMS authentication as a multi-factor method is not the best. It's not. Someone can you know, steal your SIM card and flip it over so that you're they can have your phone number, and you would never even know. It happens a lot when they're trying to get that code. Once again, you know, if I go to the ability to steal your phone number, your cell phone number, well, then I have access to that code. But if you have one of the other authentication methods, a security key or an authentication app, then even if I steal your phone number, I'm not getting that code. And that's really where a lot of security professionals come in, that because SIM jacking, as it's called, is so common and people do it all the time, that SMS is really not the preferred method. And there are other ways of doing it. Now, where I changed, I guess, a lot of cybersecurity is, and I've listened to a bunch, and look, I'm coming out of kind of left field here, but I will say, before I even start saying that why I think this is a bad thing for some people, if you've ever ran a service that utilizes MMS or SMS, you know there's a cost for it. There is a fee associated with sending those messages out. And you know, prior, obviously Twitter has had no problem in doing that. And then since it's purchased by Elon Musk, well, now things are a little different. They're trying to save money by cutting costs where they can. And this is just one of those services where it is. So from a business perspective, why I don't love it, I can understand why they would try to do this, as there are better methods. As a lot of security professionals will tell you, you shouldn't be using it anyway. There's a big push in the security world to get rid of SMS and MMS messages that contain a code. The downside being that there's so many places that still utilize it as a primary way of verifying who you are when you put your password in. A lot of banking sites continue to use this, and slowly they're making the switch over and they're giving you other options, but a lot of them still have it by default. Now, where I want to say this is a bad idea really comes down to people who are older, who, you know, may not have the skills or the technical abilities to have to understand a rotating key application like you would get from, you know, a Google Authenticator or one of those lines. I like some of the authenticators to give you the push option where it pushes a notification to you, you say yes, and then you're in. But that's not an option here. It's one of the ones where you have to look at the thing and give it a six-digit code, which is absolutely fine. I mean, I use that personally, as well as have a security key as an option to access my account. But I understand I am not the only one out there who may have this, but it's a special skill set that I have. I understand the technology. My job is security. I want to make sure it's locked down the best it can be. But people who are older may not have those technical skills enough to be able to think to open that app and copy it over and make sure they get that number quickly back into the website before the code changes. And then, I mean, granted, there is a little bit of leeway, but then what does that look like? So part of this worries because I think the forcing off of that MFA option that people relied upon and such a quick turnaround of that, and the fact that there might be a lot of accounts out there who are secured by it and then people have just abandoned them, will give a lot of opportunity for people to take over accounts they may not have had access to before, because MFA is just being shut off. It's not being pushed to another method because you have to register those methods. So Twitter's response is that just gets cut off. And I think that's a danger for a lot of people out there. Is that as a company, as an organization, you should already be on one of those other options. But if you're not and you're older, I understand. You know, sometimes, you know, technology changes are hard. And in today's world, we have to kind of keep up with them as fast as we can. But I'm not one of the security people there who say, look, well, it's great, you should be doing this, it forces you over. I feel that way. Don't get me wrong. I want everyone to be as safe as possible. But I also understand there's a learning curve that not everyone has, and that's dangerous. And that makes people insecure, because I'll tell you, some people I know will just allow it to be shut off and they won't turn MFA back on again. And I understand from Twitter's point of view, they're trying to save money so that, you know, Elon Musk's investment may pay off at some point. But I don't want to be the one who just says this is the best idea out there. It's not. It's dangerous, and hopefully we don't see too much ramification from it. But I would rather people get to the new method. I would encourage people to get to the new method. If that's not you, and I hate to say this because I don't want to encourage anyone to buy Twitter Blue, but if you rely on that SMS service and you are uncomfortable going to one of the other authentication MFA methods, then pay for Blue. You'll still get the SMS, MMS messages texted to your phone, and then you'll still remain secure. Now, you may have heard a thing or two about cryptocurrencies this year because it's, you know, the cool thing that's out there. And you may have heard of the company called Coinbase, which is a cryptocurrency exchange. And we've kind of talked about the show. There was a phishing attempt that was not email-based, it was SMS-based or text message-based, which is sometimes called smishing. But an attacker obtained contact information belonging to multiple employees in Coinbase based on a fake SMS messages. Coinbase has said that at this time, you know, there's no customer funds and no data being missing or accessed. It's completely unaffected. But it's something, you know, in this modern world, you have to kind of pay attention to. So first, let's talk about the attack. On Sunday, February 5th, an SMS alert urging company employees to log into to their accounts. And this was obviously the fake SMS message. Most employees did the right thing. They ignored the message. Unfortunately, just like everything, most doesn't really help. One employee did fall for it. They entered their credentials. And they, you know, pretty much gave their credentials to a hacker. The hacker thanked them for it and prompted them to disregard that message. Their account was fine now. Obviously, this is all fake from what the malicious actor was doing. So then once they were in, they logged into Coinbase's internal systems using those stolen credentials. And obviously there needed to be something along the lines of MFA there, but this is what happens when there's a problem. Because once again, they only had the username and password. If they would have an MFA, here's where you get a big win, and that would have stopped right there. Now, 20 minutes later, the hacker called the employee claiming to be from the Coinbase IT team, which makes sense in a big company. Sometimes you don't always know all the IT people. And directed them to log into their workstations and then gave them some kind of instructions on what to do. Once again, not great stuff. This is the hacker walking them through to be able to install more software. Now, I will say the cybersecurity incident response team at Coinbase was pretty quick. They detected that unusual activity within about 10 minutes of the attacker getting into the system. They contacted the employee to inquire about, you know, some usual activity they've seen. If you ever worked in a SOC, this is something you do all the time. You just have to make sure that the information is exactly as you see it. The employee then realized that he was going on. He realized he wasn't talking to the IT department. The security was like, nope, you're this is not good. And they broke off all communications with the hacker. Now, the good thing about this is Coinbase is turning around and giving some things that you can look forward to if this attacker tries to hit you. And one of the things was any web traffic from the company's technology assets, they saw, including SSO dash and then whatever.com or dash SSO.com or login and something SSO dashboard something.com. They used all these different variations that kind of trick people into it. They said look for any downloads or attempted downloads of specific remote desktop viewers, including AnyDesk and ISL Online, which I'm assuming what the hacker is trying to do. Any attempts to access the organization with a third-party VPN provider. This one they called out Mulvad VPN, M-U-L-L-V-A-D. They said be on the lookout for any incoming phone calls, text messages from specific providers, including Google Voice, Skype, Vonage, Nexmo, and Bandwidth. These are just a hacker trying to pretend to be another company to get you to do what they want you to do. And there was an attempt to install a browser extension called Edit This Cookie. So if you see any of those things on your network, please be on cautious about it. And make sure all your users know what the proper procedures are to reaching out to them in the middle of an emergency. So that you don't have this issue where, you know, employee might go, oh, well, this is probably them. Make sure they're trained. Make sure they know what they're doing. And make sure they just report anything to you. There's not much you can do to block SMS messages except individually per phone. But if they know, you'll be safe online. And for our final story this week, depending on your view of hackers, this could be a very good story for you. So Spain's national court has agreed to the extradition of to the United States of a British citizen. So we have three different countries involved here. A British citizen being extradited to the U.S. Who's currently under Spain's authority. So the person involved has allegedly took part in multiple computer hacks, most notoriously the July 2020 hack of 130 Twitter accounts of public figures, if you remember. This included people like Joe Biden, Barack Obama, Bill Gates. And there's been a court case going on where the requirements, as far as the Spain's national court has said, the requirements have been met to hand Joseph James O'Connor to U.S. authorities based on 14 charges. Some of these charges include revelation of secrets, membership of a criminal gang, illegal access to computer systems, internet fraud, and money laundering and extortion. Now, James Joseph O'Connor, which I swear they just use the three names when you're in trouble, is 23 years old. He was born in Liverpool, England, and he was arrested in the southern Spanish coastal town of Estepona. I'm going to guess that's how you say Estepona, Estepona, in July of 2021. And ever since, there's been a court case on trying to get him out. So this is where you get the three different places. The U.S. wants him. He was born and he's a citizen of Great Britain, but he's living, or at least was caught in Spain. He's also been accused of hacking Snapchat of a so far unidentified public figure. And this is where one of those charges come in. He had tried to extort them for money, saying, hey, look, you've got nude photographs in your Snapchat. I'll make them public unless you pay me. So that's where the extortion comes in. And then he was also believed to have been part of swatting. If you're not familiar with swatting, this is where someone pretends to call a local police department, pretending to be a crazy person or whatever, enough to have that local jurisdiction's SWAT team, which is where the swatting comes in, raid the house. Usually to scare the person, but there have been cases where it has been deadly, because mostly the SWAT team believes what you told them. So if you tell them you're a crazy maniac, and then you open the door and you have no idea what's going on, and you know, and you have these people just screaming at you, it could be pretty bad. So yeah, this guy is going to get extradited to the United States, face charges for all this stuff. So as I was saying, if you're in that camp that says, hey, look, you know, hackers get what's coming to them. Yeah. And look, the Snapchat stuff, I mean, there have been so many celebrity leaks online. But I tend to draw the line, at a person's, new photographs. I mean, that's, to me, that's a little level of personal that's not there, unless they're, you know, morals are getting hard at a certain point, but I don't think releasing nude photos of anyone is ever really a just thing to do, and to try to extort money. That's really what it came down to. They didn't really care about anything else. They just wanted the money. But you know, this is what it comes to nowadays. And swatting to me is, it happens all the time. I hate it because you're putting the risk of someone's life for a joke. And then if you're hoping they get killed, that's even worse. But usually as a joke, and that's not something that I think you should be able to get away with. And it's so easy nowadays with, you know, digital phone lines. You can make 911 believe whatever you want to believe. You can spoof a phone number. You can say you're at this address and the system will believe it. So very dangerous, but hopefully we'll follow this case the best we can. Hopefully there'll be news on it and we can kind of find out what happens to James Joseph O'Connor and what he will face and what his defense will be in these acts. I'm assuming the U.S. has probably met quite a level of burden to get him extradited over here. So I'm assuming they have a pretty shut case, but I do wish him a fair case over here. But I'm sure they probably have already, you know, cross their T's and dotted their I's if they're getting him over there for this. All right, everyone. Thanks so much for listening to the show. Don't forget, you can find show notes for this episode available on cybersecuritynewsbite.com. You can find more information about me, Jim Guckin, at jimguckin.com. And make sure you stay safe online, and we'll talk again next week.
You've been listening to the Cybersecurity News Bite with Jim Guckin. Learn more about our show at cybersecuritynewsbite.com.